Hey guys, this is the Vertical Guidance Podcast.
I'm Wyatt Fink.
And I'm Alex Danger.
And we're interviewing pilots from around the industry about their flight training experiences. And our goal is to make getting into the aviation industry easier by offering advice to people that are right on the edge of beginning their aviation journey.
So let's get into it. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. All right, today we have Zach Dabrowski on today. He is a CFI, CFII, MEI, former line instructor, former standards instructor, and now a lead instructor here at UND. Welcome on to Zach.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you on. So like what we like to do with everybody is just, it's always interesting hearing other people's kind of road into aviation. So what got you into aviation, Zach?
I don't really have anyone in my family who's in aviation, no airline pilots, nothing like that. But when I was in high school, I took a aerospace engineering class with one of my favorite teachers, and just kind of on a whim, I just didn't want to take any serious classes, I guess. And it ended up basically being just playing on Microsoft Flight Sim for an hour a day. And I was like, hey, this is kind of fun. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life at that point. I was kind of thinking in business, but I kind of liked aviation, I guess, at that point. And I was just like, well, we'll look up some schools and figure out how to kind of do this as a career. And UND was kind of the first one that came up. And so I came into her and I liked the school, and the rest is history. Here I am now.
Here I am now. Now a lead instructor here at UND. So coming up to UND, how'd you know like this was the place for you, you know?
So for me, so I toured a couple other schools. I toured Southern Illinois University. They have a decent sized flight program. I didn't really like their campus. And the guy that was giving us the tour there, he just kept talking about UND the entire time, which I thought was kind of strange. and then I toured. Yeah, he was just like, he kept just trying to like
psychology or something, maybe.
Like, yeah, I was like, buddy, talk about your school. Don't talk about the other schools that I'm looking at. Like, and anyway, so that was kind of a weird experience. I didn't really like their campus, or it was just kind of, I didn't feel right there. I toured Lewis University, which is a really small kind of private college outside of Chicago. And it was just too small for me. And I came to UND, and I just kind of fell in love with the campus. I think we have a really nice campus. I wasn't too worried about the weather, even though it ended up sucking a lot more than I thought.
It isn't great.
It's not ideal. It's not ideal. But yeah, I really just fell in love with the campus, and had a great time. And kind of as soon as I stepped on campus, I knew that I was going to apply here and try to get in here.
So did you come in with your private or not?
Nope. I did zero flight training before I came up to school. I did a discovery flight. Zero. Well, I guess I did a discovery flight. I don't think I logged it. But so I did one discovery flight and I was like, yeah, this is pretty sick. And so, yeah, I came in with zero experience. So I've done everything from private pilot all the way up through multi-engine instructor here.
What are you doing right now in aviation? And then where do you see yourself in 5 years?
So currently, right now, I'm a lead flight instructor at UND, which basically means I have a group of about 20 or so-ish CFIs under me that I directly manage. I've been instructing here for 2 years. So I started instructing in June of 19. Started as a line instructor, did that for 6-8 months. And then I got hired into the standards department, which is basically the evaluation side of things. So I was a full-time evaluator for 6-8 months again. And then in February, I got hired on as a lead flight instructor, and I've been doing that since. So just spent about 6 months as a lead, and I have around 700 hours of dual given right now, a little bit more. And then in 5 years, so I do plan on leaving UND sometime soon, I guess you could say. I'm looking to go to SkyWest, or at least the regionals to start with, and kind of just see how that goes. If I like it, great, I'll continue. Try to get on with a major or something like that. If I don't like it, then we'll kind of just see where aviation takes me. There's a lot of different paths you can go. And as long as I'm flying airplanes, I'll be happy.
Cool. Yeah, you're my boss. That's kind of wild.
not your boss.
True. Close though. Don't get me fired.
I'll try not to.
So when you said that, like, there was more options outside UND, what are some different things you would be interested into doing?
I can really definitely see myself in kind of the corporate side of aviation. I think that offers a little bit more kind of variety in the day-to-day life. You know, I keep hearing about the airlines, how you're always going to the same, you know, 5, 10, 15 airports, running the same routes day in and day out. And, you know, I think that would be fun and all. However, I do like the variety in jobs. I like when things are always changing, switching things up, doing something new every day. And so that's kind of one of the benefits of corporate that I see. The other things I've kind of thought about is trying to get into aircraft sales. I actually really love general aviation, flying kind of smaller airplanes. You know, now I probably don't want to fly a Piper Archer for the rest of my life, but like flying TBMs, PC-12s, anything in the Piper lineup, like the M500, 600, stuff like that. I think that could be a lot of fun. And I love talking to people. I love meeting with people. I love being around people. So I could definitely see myself getting into aircraft sales. I think that would be really fun too. Or just kind of staying in the management side of things, like, you know, getting in with a corporate flight department and then kind of working my way up and eventually maybe managing a corporate flight department. I think that could be a lot of fun. Just variety, doing different things every day is kind of what I'm always shooting for.
So how would you break into like the aircraft sales market of jobs? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I feel like, you get, like your foot somebody. In the door. Yeah.
Getting your foot I would in do the that. Door.
If you can make a 7% sales commission on a $3 million jet, that's a pretty good payday.
You're set for the year. You sell one jet a year.
Basically.
The biggest thing for that is networking and getting to know people. So, you know, get to know my biggest thing is get to know your professors here at UND. I've had different job opportunities come up through just talking with Dan Malott and his connections and other professors like that. It's all about who you know. And that's one of the benefits that UND has is if you've taken a Dan Malott class, you've heard about the UND Mafia. UND has alumni in just everywhere in aviation. Everywhere you go, you're going to find someone who went through the UND program, and you automatically have a little bit of a connection there. And so, you know, get to know your professors, kind of talk to them about what your goals are, and they will always be more than happy to kind of give you names and numbers of people that can kind of help you get that foot in the door. So it's really just all about networking.
Yeah, I know whenever I look into like LinkedIn, it seems like you click on any like big aviation or even small aviation company, and there's always, you always see like 5 UND alum or 100 UND alum.
Yep. 5 team like, members work there or something. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's pretty crazy how across the board we have alumni and all that.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to, we were flying back from Oshkosh actually, and we stopped in Rice Lake for fuel. And one of the guys at the FBO was a UND alum. He was getting a TBM fixed there. Up in Rice Lake. And so just you run into people basically everywhere you go. You run into someone from UND. It's kind of crazy.
Pretty crazy, dude.
But yeah, so with like those like UND alums, have you like reached out and figured out more on outside of corporate or outside of regionals, or have you just been set towards regionals right now at the moment?
So I guess when I took 408, it's called Fleet Planning and Aircraft Acquisition with Dan Malott. It's really focused on, you know, kind of, you know, managing a corporate flight department, I would say, like figuring out what airplane is going to fit the mission, how to get the airplane, how to buy an airplane, all that kind of stuff. And so in that class, which I thought was super interesting, and I highly recommend it. It's pretty easy. It's like a 4-credit class. Super interesting with Dan Malott if you're at all interested in the business side of things. So highly recommend that class. But yeah, I was talking to Dan Malott one day about, you know, kind of the corporate side of things. And I told him I was from a kind of a smaller town in Wisconsin. And there's actually a kind of a decent sized fractional company that works out of there. And Dan Malott basically hooked me up with one of the pilots. He gave me their number. I was talking to the pilot. And I got to tour their facilities, and when I went home one year and got to know a couple of pilots that work for them, and you know, that was a really cool experience. Just again, it's all about just networking, just getting names, numbers of people who, you know, are willing to talk about what they do, And so I basically talked to them about the corporate lifestyle, and I was like, yeah, that sounds really awesome.
And that's more like general aviation that was going on over there. So small yep. aircraft, or is that more like charter stuff?
It was like charter stuff. It was still there. What do they fly? They fly Hawkers and Falcons. And so, yeah, they do just like it's just another charter company.
Okay. So going back to like starting off as a student, what are some things that you might have excelled at or struggled at, or some things that you've seen your students excel at or struggle at, and how do you work with that, especially the struggles?
So I guess one of the things I see most students struggle with, and I definitely had struggles with it at first, was just the time management when you first come into college. So obviously, you know, the private pilot course 102 is one of the most time consuming and probably one of the hardest courses that we have, on top of the fact that you're taking it, you know, your first semester, second semester in college. And so obviously college is a big adjustment for a lot of people, for everyone. And so trying to balance, you know, adjusting to college, being away from home for the first time, and then also, you know, trying to get a private pilot's license. It's not an easy balance. And so one of the things I always try to kind of have the conversation with students is, you know, I want you to, you know, enjoy college. Like UND, again, is a very, very fun place to be. There's a lot of things to do kind of just on campus and to get involved in. However, you know, I don't want students to forget, you know, why they're there. So there's definitely has to be an emphasis on flight training, but also, you know, you got to remember to also have fun at the same time, because, you know, the 4 years does go by a lot quicker than you would imagine. And so biggest thing is just kind of time management and kind of, you know, organizing your priorities to kind of get the most out of not only your flight training, but also your time, your freshman year, and just kind of throughout all of college. That's probably my best advice, and kind of one of the things I see people struggle with most is kind of just the time management of things.
Yeah. We talked about that in our last podcast. We thought that a lot of people struggle with time management and just figuring out when you need to put the nose down and mm-hmm. get your stuff done.
So like as a yep. CFI, do you try to like talk to the guy and be like, hey, or girl, what's going on with time management? Try to figure that out. Like, do you try to get like more on that personal level to figure out what's going on, or do you have them kind of push them towards something and have them figure it out? That makes sense. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I know what you're trying to get at. It definitely depends on the student. You know, some students are really good about it. They just kind of, they can just find the groove right away. And they kind of just figure it out on their own. Other people can definitely struggle with it, and it takes time to kind of figure it out. And so, you know, if the student obviously can, you know, figure it out right away, great. You know, then there's not too much of a conversation there. But if I start to see like a student that, you know, is not coming prepared, not showing up constantly, I'm safing or, you know, canceling last minute because of things, that's when I'll kind of start the conversation by saying like kind of exactly what I was saying earlier. Like, you know, I want you to have fun, but also, you know, don't forget why we're here. Like when you're canceling these flights like this, you know, we're losing proficiency. It's costing more money. It's creating delays in your training. Or on the other side of things, like if I'm cruising along with a student, if, you know, I have time to do an extra launch or two during the week and we end up getting, you know, 3, 4, 5 lessons done in a week. I don't fly on the weekends with them. I tell them, you know, take the weekend off. You know, we made great progress this week. You're doing awesome. Take some time to relax and kind of decompress and go have some fun. Because, you know, on the other side of things, if students are really motivated and they want to fly, it's really easy to get burnt out on it. You know, if you're just like constantly going, you can kind of burn your student out. And, you know, that's going to have, you know, longer effects than if you just kind of give them the weekend off and let them kind of relax and have some fun.
Is that like your biggest antidote for burnout? Because we talked about this when on our last one with a couple of buddies on how to like get away from burnout, because that's a pretty serious issue here with aviation, because you can burn yourself out pretty quickly. So is that your antidote on working with that?
It's definitely different for kind of what level you're at. So obviously for students, like you only can control as a student, you can only control so much. Like if your CFI can only fly 3 days a week, you probably won't get burnt out too much. And the biggest thing is just as a student, if you do feel like you're starting to get burnt out, like just be honest. Just tell your instructor, a few days before, like, hey, I'm exhausted, I'm burnt out, I need the weekend off, or can we just, reschedule this launch for a day from now or a couple of days from now, so I can give some so I can get some time to just relax. As a CFI, I understand the pressures there are to work. You have plenty of students you need to fly with. When you're not flying, you're not making money, you can't pay rent. So for like the CFIs, it's like, you have to remember that, yes, when you're not flying, you're not getting paid, you're not making rent, but at the same time, if you burn yourself out, one, you're gonna hate the job, and you're not gonna be able to give, good quality instruction. And two, if you feel exhausted, that's affecting the safety of the flight. And so you need to, so like for instance, for me, like I don't, when I was a CFI, or I guess I'm still am a CFI, but when I was a line instructor, I told my students, like, I don't fly on Sundays because I need at least one day off during the week to kind of just get away from the airport, get away from the job, and just, have a day to decompress and go relax. And so that's kind of one of the things that I did. And I tell all my CFIs now that I manage, it's like, I don't expect you to work on Sundays. I'm not going to prevent you from doing it, but I don't want you to work on Sundays because I believe everyone needs at least one day away from the airport a week just to kind of relax and not think about airplanes for a day.
Yeah. And one of the things that I'm more curious about is because UND and just flight instructors in general are so busy, jam-packed. I mean, you're spending whole days at the airport. How do you like make sure you're current and like proficient on different information, making sure you like keep a sharp mind on different things and don't get burned out and just go through the rhythm, you know?
It comes with experience. So obviously your first few months as a CFI is going to be very overwhelming. You're always going to feel like you're missing something, you're behind the curve. And it definitely just comes with experience. Like you'll get comfortable with the job in a few months. Kind of you'll get in a groove with your students. Like, the first block, I would say, of any new course that you're teaching, you're kind of just like, what the hell is going on? But part of it is like the self-study kind of thing. And so what I tell all my CFIs in my expectations meeting is, when was the last time you flew S turns, or the ground reference maneuvers that you don't do one time in 414? If you're not doing your stage, you don't do it again for the rest of the course. So I tell all my CFIs, like, if you're teaching a new course for the first time, or just your first student in general, make sure you're coming prepared to your lessons, as well as, expecting your students to come prepared, because if you're not prepared, your students aren't going to come prepared. So, read up on the stand man again, refresh your memory on, how to fly that maneuver, look over the lesson before your students gets there, give yourself a little bit more time in between launches so you can kind of review what you're doing that day with that student. So you kind of know what's going on. It'll make everything go a lot smoother. And that's, again, that's just something that comes with experience. Once you teach a course a couple times, so like, you teach 222 two or three times, you get in the groove of things, you kind of figure out how to do things. For instance, like my first time teaching 325, I felt like it was a disaster. Like I didn't really know what was going on in each lesson. Everything was kind of new to me, but I've taught it a few times now, and so like I have kind of my own way of doing each lesson. Like,
It's a
like for
rhythm.
instance, like there, yeah, you get in the rhythm of how you teach the
Yeah,
course. So
yeah.
for instance, like lesson 77 is your second time flying the airplane. And I think, and there's a lot of stuff on that. You're teaching them how to land the airplane for the first time. You're also going through all the single engine stuff for the first time. And so it's like, sure, you can do it in 2.5 hours if you get a double launch. However, your student's going to be so exhausted by the end of the day, and so are you. So I always just break that lesson up into two lessons. I tell the students, like, hey, we're going to do half the lesson today. We're going to incomplete. We're going to do half the lesson tomorrow. And that's kind of just some of the things you learn as you teach the courses more and more often. You figure out how to do it kind of your way and what works best for you. And so again, that just definitely comes with experience.
Yeah, and it's such a true thing on like CFIs being proficient because in like 323, it's more likely that the student is more comfortable with the certain maneuvers because the CFIs haven't done a whole lot of them. They might show it in the beginning, but then after that, I mean, they only do a handful of landings. They only show and demonstrate. They don't do the whole flight. Is that like how do you get around that? Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, actually that's a perfect kind of example, because my very first two students when I was a CFI was teaching 323 in the Archer. I had never flown the Archer, any commercial maneuvers in the Archer, until my first lesson with my students. So I did, because I did 323 in the Skyhawk, and I was teaching commercial maneuvers in the Archer. Jeez. And I was honest. Like, I've always been very honest with my students. I was like, straight up, I've never done this in this airplane, so I'm going to give it a shot. It might go great. It might go terribly. And let's kind of see what happens. And they weren't bad, but I don't know if they were technically to commercial ACS standards. But, you know, and you're just kind of honest with your student. Like, if you can teach someone how to do, you can kind of talk through a maneuver no matter what airplane you're doing it in. And it's just, you know, especially in the commercial course, like those maneuvers are pretty easy to kind of just figure out. Not, I don't want to say on your own, because like I am providing instruction, but they are kind of easy to figure out on your own.
Yeah, your own little tips and tricks on that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And so it's, you know, and when you get to landings, like I land the airplane 3 times every 90 days, because that's all it's required of me. And in the courses I teach, usually I'm not really on the controls. And so when you're at, you know, 600-700 hours dual given, you know, it's hard to lose proficiency. Like I can still go land an airplane after 90 days and, you know, they're not going to be the prettiest landings in the world, but they're still safe and they still,
but you know,
still
what the job done. You know, you got,
I know what to do.
You know what to do, airspeeds, all that stuff.
Exactly.
So, I mean, like the big thing with like CFI is like, you can definitely back this up, is like, you're going to make mistakes as long as you can explain why you made them and how to like correct them. So that's like one of the big things with like 323, like what you said, going into like the Archer rather than from the Skyhawk, as long as you like explain what's going on, then they're probably able to understand it, right?
Yeah, like you can still, like, just because I've never done the maneuver in the airplane doesn't mean I don't know how to fly the maneuver. So like I did it in the Archer and it wasn't pretty, but I was able to kind of, I can still see what the student was doing wrong when they were doing it. So I was still able to, you know, kind of teach them how to do it correctly. And so it was really not an issue. It was just kind of funny because, you know, even just like total time in the airplane, like those students probably had 60, 70 hours in the Archer. And I had, I think, 20 hours in the Archer when I started instructing. So I was like, they can even land better than me. And I was like, well, good thing you're 323. You can go ahead and land it.
You two figuring it out, I guess.
Yep, pretty much. But that shouldn't be a problem for most instructors now, because I think everyone who's going through the program now has all their time in the Archer. So it was just, I kind of hit that transition at a weird time where I did all my training in the Skyhawk, and then except for one course, and then start teaching in the Archer.
Yeah. And then one of the things I was kind of curious about too is like, how do you believe the flight school that you're at has given you the best opportunities to like go where you want to be as a pilot? Like, what is your goal? Like, what's your final goal? Do you know what that is? Kind of hazy.
Not really. I don't have a final goal. I think it makes life more fun. Just not knowing where, what the next step is. I guess I should say not knowing where the next step after the next step is, where the next two steps lead. If I had everything laid out for me, like I feel like I would just be bored. Like if you knew I was going to SkyWest and then to Delta, you know, like a lot of these pathway programs are great for some people. I think they're great opportunities. Or 2 years at a regional, you'll automatically be at Delta. Like that's fantastic if you know for a fact that you want to go to Delta. Those pathway programs just aren't for me. I don't want to go to Delta that badly where I want to sign up for that. And again, I kind of like having the mystery of kind of what is going to be next. But yeah, UND. So what I really enjoyed about UND was just the extra classes we got to take, because again, you know, I like learning about all different sides of aviation, all different aspects of it. And so I really enjoyed all the different classes that we had the opportunity to take. And then, you know, outside of aviation, I guess, you know, with UND, being a four-year university, you know, we have a lot of opportunities to get involved outside of UND, or outside of aviation, I mean. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I got involved with a fraternity, you know, I was in Kappa Sigma. And so that was really fun. I got to have a lot of great experiences doing that. Again, all outside of aviation. I joined the Aerospace Advisory Council, Student Aviation Advisory Council, which, you know, it was more aviation focused, but it wasn't necessarily like flying airplanes. It was getting involved with the administration within the school and kind of working on projects with them and being the voice of reason or the voice or the means of communication between the students and the staff and the faculty and kind of advocating for students and what's going to be best for us. Also got involved in, you know, student government, being the aerospace sciences senator and getting involved with not only the aviation kind of administration, but also just the school-wide administration and trying to kind of be the voice for the aviation students when it came to decisions that were affecting the entire school. And so that was one thing I highly recommend people do is get involved both within the aviation clubs. You know, we have so many great clubs you can join at UND. But also, you know, get involved in the clubs outside of aviation, you know, expand your horizons, get to know people who don't want to talk about airplanes 24/7, because as I always say, as much as you love airplanes, you get sick of talking about it pretty quick. At least I did. So I really enjoyed being able to meet people who didn't fly airplanes all the time.
Yeah. Meet some business majors, but moral of the story, join a club, I guess. Right.
Moral of the story is join a club.
Get involved.
Get out and do something.
Spread your wings a little bit and find some non-aviation friends.
I was really hoping you wouldn't say spread your wings and fly.
Nope. Spread your wings and talk to some business guys.
There you go.
But I guess.
Yeah, I could ask the next one if you want.
All right, yeah, go ahead.
I haven't heard Wyatt say a word.
He's been So other than sitting at your computer for hours on end reading trading comments, which I'm sure you do every day. What's your day-to-day operation of being a lead flight instructor at UND?
So the day-to-day operations as a lead it changes every single day, which again, I really enjoy. I like doing, you know, again, like I've said probably like three different times now, I like doing different things every day. So a lot of my day is spent, you know, doing a lot of administrative stuff. So like you said, looking over training comments, checking in on student progress, making sure, you know, CFIs are training equally with their students, making sure students are progressing, trying to figure out if, you know, there is a student or someone that's struggling with something, I can kind of talk to that CFI and kind of give them some advice on how to kind of get over the learning plateau that a student might be stuck on. Other things can range anywhere from filming 3-Minute Thursdays to so a quick shout out to the UND Aerocast YouTube channel. If you guys want to learn how to do steep turns, my episode should be premiering in a couple weeks.
Whoa, so big shot. Go
check that one out. Oh yeah, it's gonna be
millions of views.
Very informative. But yeah, so you know, getting involved with the multimedia production at UND. I got involved in doing the air shows. You know, we went to the Fargo Air Show, went to the Oshkosh Air Show. So I was kind of recruiting for UND, doing that kind of stuff. Other days, you know, if I want to, or if kind of the schedule works out, I go fly 3 or 4 times a day. You know, if I have enough students that need to train or there's enough stage checks to do, I can go, you know, get 5, 6, 7 hours of flight time in a day. And so it's just being able to make my own schedule and kind of just fill up the day with, you know, what I want to do that day is pretty great. I really enjoyed that aspect. So I kind of do just a little bit of everything around here.
So you get to like pick your day on like what you're doing is what you're saying. Kind of like, I want to do this today, I want to do this next day. Or is it like getting thrown at you and like, oh no, I need to figure this out, figure that out kind of thing.
A little bit of both. You know, obviously some problems that come across my desk need to be addressed, you know, then and there. And that ends up being what I'm doing that day, or at least for that couple hours. But yeah, I do get to make my schedule. So like, you know, because I only have like a couple students and a couple stage slots, I can, my flight schedule is pretty flexible. So like, if I do want to do only, you know, one flight and a briefing or two flights one day, I can just kind of schedule those. I'll just kind of fill in between with all the other kind of aspects of the job that I need to do. Like again, the administrative work, the paperwork. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it can be flexible, but also, you know, there are some things that come across my desk that need to be taken care of that day. So it can throw a wrench in the plans, you know, it can kind of, I've had things that come across my desk that completely derail my day, but you know, it's all just part of the job and part of the fun, I think.
So why did you like want to be a lead? Didn't you just want to be a line instructor, get all your hours and go off to the regionals? Why'd you go up the ladder?
Gotta get that new Jeep money.
Yeah.
I got the Jeep right after we shut down, so I was broke. I didn't have income when I got the Jeep.
Tough.
That was the worst financial decision of my life, but whatever. You know, you live and you learn.
Live and learn.
No, so why did I climb the ladder? I always kind of need something kind of dangling over my head, something to reach for. Otherwise I get complacent and I just get kind of bored. So, you know, getting hired as a line instructor, I was like super excited. I was a line instructor and I was like, all right, you know, what's next? What can I do? So then I applied to be an SOF and I got the job as the SOF and I was like, sweet, you know, more responsibilities, kind of, again, something to kind of shake up the day a little bit. Then when I was an SOF, my roommate, Dan Claver, who you had on the show earlier, he was in standards at the time and I really kind of enjoyed how he described the job sounded really enjoyable. So I was like, so that was my next goal then. So I was like, okay, what can I do now to set me up and to be in the best position to, you know, get to standards. And that was, you know, telling my lead, I want to do stage checks and, you know, always pestering them saying like, hey, I want to do stage checks. I want to do stage checks because you can't get hired in standards without doing stage checks. So it was always, you know, what can I do now to set myself up to have the best opportunity at the next goal? And so standards came along, I applied, I got into standards and I was, okay, what's next? And, you know, at the time it was, next step is I wanted to be a lead, but with just kind of the way the industry was and kind of the timeline of everything, I was like, I don't know if that's going to happen. So I kind of, you know, kind of put that to the side and I was like, okay, next step is regional. So like, what can I do now to get, you know, to put myself in the best opportunity to get to the regionals? And that was like fly, fly, fly. So that first summer when I was in standards, I was working a hell of a lot. I was working, you know, I was putting in 40 hour, you know, weeks on the, in the time clock, but that, you know, that generally means 50, 60, 70 hour weeks, you know, kind of in the office. And so I was working, trying to, you know, get the hours, get everything I need to go to the regionals. And then obviously COVID happened, which, you know, derailed kind of everything. And so that's when the opportunity came again to become a lead. I was like, okay, well, the regionals aren't, you know, moving right now. So I kind of had to not necessarily like switch paths, but I had to kind of like detour. And so I was like, okay, how can I position myself to become a lead? Cause like that option was on the table. And I was always kind of interested in being a lead because I enjoyed the mentorship side of things. I enjoyed, you know, I had a lot of friends who were kind of right below me who were kind of coming up through the flight training ranks within the fraternity. And, you know, I was always, you know, really happy and more than willing to kind of answer questions and kind of help them, guide them along the path I was really just on. And so I really liked the mentorship side of things. And there was a lot of that involved in the advisory council. And so that was really awesome. And so that was kind of one of the ways that I was kind of drawn to being a lead. Another thing was just kind of getting the management experience. I've always enjoyed being in kind of a managerial role, kind of, you know, getting a team together to accomplish kind of one goal and kind of seeing that through. I've always really enjoyed that kind of thing. And so that's another reason why I wanted to become a lead. And so, yeah, after kind of COVID came, I was like, all right, I mean, this is my opportunity. How can I put myself in the best position to become a lead? And so I knew one of the things they're looking for was an MEI. So I got my MEI and that put me in a good position to become a lead. And so eventually I got hired on as a lead. And again, now I'm just looking to see what's going to set me up for the next goal. So again, next goal right now is airlines. And so I'm doing everything I can now to kind of set myself apart to, you know, get that first airline job.
Yeah, it seems like you definitely are doing that, becoming a lead at UND. So it seems like you're like management, stuff like that. Do you have an aviation management degree? I always forgot if you did or not.
No, I wish I did. I wish I would have done something like that. But no, I don't like school. So I took the bare minimum classes required.
120 credits.
I graduated in 4 years with 120 credits, not one credit more.
What an overachiever.
Hey, that's what I'm doing. I'm coming right to 120. It's to be mint.
What's the reason to take more classes if you don't have to? So nope, commercial aviation, no minors, no specializations, nothing like that. Which honestly probably is one of my bigger regrets, I guess, through UND is not doing the management degree, because again, obviously I enjoy being in management and I wish I would have done airport management. Kind of as a backup plan too. I know everyone always says like, oh, have a backup plan in case, you know, COVID happens, in case, you know, the industry, you know, has a downturn every 10 years. And so, you know, I wish I would have done management, kind of at least had a backup plan, but no, I never got a management degree.
I feel like too, once you get into like aviation, you can kind of, once you build like a resume, you can get into management. I don't know if like, do you need like a management degree to get into management in aviation? Is that like
a required thing? I know. I've never really talked to anyone about it. I think, you know, just being at UND helps because they know kind of how well-rounded the education is, because, you know, we have to take all the different classes. So like I've taken management classes, you know, GA operations, airline operations, fleet planning, you know, I've taken all those classes, but like, I don't have I also don't have a certificate that says like I took those classes. And so I think, you know, having a management degree will definitely help you. Like, it's not going to hurt you, but I don't think it, not getting it necessarily closes all those doors.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. I have the business specialization. Actually, I got an email from that.
Do you recommend that, Wyatt? Do you recommend doing the business specialization?
Yeah. I mean, like I took 408 with Dan Malott, like Zach was talking about. That was a pretty fun class. Definitely.
Did you take that over Zoom?
Yeah.
You took it too?
I did 407 and I liked the class so much that I did 408, but unfortunately it was over asynchronous, which was still good, but it's different in class. It's a lot different in class.
It was a lot of fun in class. Did you guys do the final project of like looking at a company and seeing if they can like afford an airplane?
Yeah, I did do that.
What company did you guys do?
I don't think we're allowed to talk about that actually.
I don't know, but I remember like filling that whole thing out. Like it was so cool to like see like the different little stats and like realizing that it's like low key, like honestly way better to have an airplane for your business. Like you get so much more business. You can go so many other places and you get so much tax write off with it too. It's like, what?
Yeah.
It's gnarly.
Yeah. So we did my dad worked at a medical device. And we did them because they had offices in Madison and San Francisco. And so they were always flying people from Madison back and forth from San Francisco, which is super expensive because, you know, Madison's not the biggest airport in the world. And so we did them. And like, it didn't quite make sense for them to get an airplane yet, but like they were like this close. Like if they had opened up like a sales office, like literally anywhere else, it would have made sense for them to have an airplane. And so I thought it was really cool to kind of, you know, go through the interview process, you know, ask them all these questions, like, how much are you spending on this? How often are you doing this? You know, what's your mission? You know, how long are your trips? How many people do you need to have? Do you care if you have a fuel stop? All that kind of stuff, and like gathering all that information. And then, you know, spending 2 hours just looking at cool airplanes, you know, trying to figure out, you know, okay, so you have your midsize, your super midsize, your light jets, you know, your ultralight jets, and just kind of comparing the costs and kind of like how it all would play out together and like the route maps. And like, oh, I just had so much fun doing that. Like that was probably like the one project in school where like I actually was interested and I actually put effort into it instead of just, you know, doing the bare minimum to get a semi-decent grade.
Like it felt like I was in like a actual job. And like, I was, you're giving it to a real business. That's the thing. It's not like you're giving it to the teacher.
It's a legitimate pitch.
They're like, oh yeah, sure. Yeah. They could probably use a Cessna 172, but no, like you're giving it to like an actual business. They're looking at, and they're actually seeing if they want an aircraft. It's like, I thought that was pretty neat.
Like the numbers made sense. Like this is like a literal real pitch. Like they could have went out and bought an airplane after this. And the numbers probably would have worked out pretty close to what we were like figuring out.
Yeah,
a lot of work, but it was so much fun.
It was a lot of work.
I could do this as a job. Like this would be a lot of fun to do.
True, it would be pretty neat. But
switching gears, I have a question.
All right,
is that okay?
No, yeah, go right ahead.
So with the UND just rolled out the new TCOs, you know, and
oh, true.
I know people are kind of tweaking a little bit. Zach, do you have any advice for the people
put them on the hot seat
like, honestly, it's really not a big deal in my opinion. It's not much has really changed, but obviously you see more than I do. What do you think?
So I'm going to get probably fired if I answer this wrong, because there's already, it can be a lot of confusion about it. So I guess my advice for the TCO is, you know, honestly, just listen to what, you know, the course managers are saying when they come to your ground school. You know, the one thing I want to stress is, like, this is not a UND decision. This is coming, the FAA is, you know, making us do this. This is not like a money grab from UND, like, oh, we want more money from you guys. No, literally, the FAA is making us do this. That they it's a new, basically, interpretation of some regs that they're making us do this. And so basically what happened was, we have to split up our TCOs. So we have to get an instrument rating, we have to get a commercial multi or a commercial license, then we have to do our multi-engine add-on. And so the way that works is, you will do 221 and 222, you'll get your instrument rating, you'll do 323, you will do a transition course within 323 where you're getting your complex time, because according to the FAA, you need your complex time before you take your commercial single engine land or your single engine land commercial rating. And yeah, so that's so kind of the very brief breakdown. Are you doing
multi-engine time in 323 then?
So during the 323 course, you take your 324 flight lab, which is, yes, 10 hours in the Seminole, getting your getting the complex time.
I think that's going to be pretty sweet, because like, you know, 325,
I think.
Yeah, once you get to 325, you're like, okay, cool, I get to fly a bigger plane now, and definitely goes faster than the Archer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it'll be a good way to kind of break things up. And obviously, so like the 325 course is changing, like there's no CRM anymore, so it's going to be, you know, there's like a transition course where you kind of learn just kind of the basics of the Seminole, stalls, sleep turn, slow flight, and then, you know, the kind of some two engine abnormals and emergencies. Then you go get your multi, or then you go get your single engine commercial, and then you go back and do all the kind of the multi stuff, the real reason why you get your multi engine rating, all the single engine stuff. And so it's really, there is a cost increase, which obviously is not great. We didn't want to increase the flight cost. You know, UND is all about making flight training as affordable as possible. And so there's a cost increase, which is unfortunate. However, you know, I think the way that we wrote the TCOs, there's a lot more fun flying in it. You know, that whole flex block, there's a lot of cross countries, a lot of solo cross countries, a lot of, you know, different opportunities to go out and just do fun flights. You know, not every single flight has to be, you know, get it done. You know, we have to do all these three things, or, you know, these 10 things on this lesson to get the lesson done. It's like, there are going to be options for you to just go out and go solo. And so I think, you know, there's definitely going to be some growing pains, definitely some issues on the transition side of things. But I think once we kind of all get into the groove of the new TCOs, they're going to enjoy it a lot more, because there's a lot more fun flying, I think, in the TCO.
It seems like too, with 324, the systems class, like when they're going over like prop, other things like that, different systems of the Seminole, it like didn't really stick to me because I wasn't in 325. So I think now when you actually get to go out and you pull the prop and you see what it does and you put a full four and see what it does, I feel like it'll make a more lasting effect rather than just talking about it in class.
I do think it's going to be a lot more helpful to kind of have, yeah, like you said, it's going to be a lot more meaningful, because like you're going to go to class and you're going to go fly the Seminole and kind of, you know, yeah, actuate the controls. And there's a lot more kind of, you know, I guess relevant information in that class now that you are, you know, that close to flying the Seminole.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So what are some, kind of more wrapping it up here, what are some like last pieces of advice that you would give any student at any point? I mean, like starting students, let's say that. What would you give starting student advice to?
The best advice I can give the new students is, number one, like ask questions. You know, obviously for the majority of you guys, like everything is going to be very new, and it's okay to ask questions, even stupid questions. Like, you know, I'd much rather have students ask me, you know, basic questions that I can answer so that they know, rather than just not asking questions because they think, oh, I should know this. Like, no, I'm too scared to ask. Also, you know, learn how to prepare for flights. So you know, studying for a flight is a lot different than like studying for an exam. Like you have to know your procedures, you have to know the setups, you have to kind of know what your hands, what your feet and what your eyes are doing, you know, hands, feet and eyes. And so, you know, definitely chair fly, like chair fly your maneuvers, think about, you know, visualize the maneuver and kind of like, you know, close your eyes and like chair fly, you know, rolling into the steep turn and like do the muscle memory of like, you know, adding a little bit of back pressure, adding a little bit of power as you're getting the 30 degrees of bank. And so visualize and chair fly. I think that definitely helps. One thing I see after 102, so like 221 and up, memorize your Archer checklists. You know, we fly the same airplane for, you know, five courses. There's no reason for you to not have your checklist memorized. Yes, you're doing it, you know, I shouldn't say this because like I didn't memorize them until I was a CFI, but yeah, it just makes things so much easier. Again, it doesn't have to be like rote memorization. Like you're still always going to back yourself up for a checklist, but just get the general flow patterns down and it makes flying the airplane a lot easier. Yes, I know you're flying 3 days a week. And so it's, you know, there's not as much muscle memory as, you know, three flights a day as a CFI, but it's just a lot easier to get ahead of the airplane, especially in the instrument environment when you have your kind of flows memorized. So I guess that'd be for like the intermediate students is at least understand the flows of your checklist, kind of know the hand motions. For my CFIs listening, just take a moment on your next flight to look out the window and just reflect on, you know, that the fact that you're getting paid to fly. I think a lot of CFIs kind of get dragged down and get distracted by the hustle and bustle of, you know, trying to squeeze your four flights in the day and you're kind of running around trying to fit everything in. But at the end of the day, like, you know, we're still getting paid to fly airplanes. So it's like, that's pretty sick. So just kind of take a minute and kind of look out the window and just realize like, yeah, we're getting paid to fly airplanes and embrace the time building. It goes by a lot quicker than you would imagine.
Do you like, I know you talked about different organizations. Is there like certain ones that you would recommend to join that would definitely help you out?
It all depends on what you're interested in. Don't, and I say this, you know, cautiously, don't join an organization just to say you join an organization. You know, if you join an organization, go to, you know, every third meeting and you throw on your resume, oh, I was in this organization. It's like, okay, sure, technically you were, but like, join an organization that you actually are interested in and actually want to make a difference in. So it's like, if you join, you know, if you try to get in the Student Aviation Advisory Council, you know, have ideas, have plans, join that because you want to make a difference for students, not because you want to have it on your resume. You know, don't join a fraternity because you want it on your resume. Join it because you want to get to know the guys in the house. So it's my biggest advice would be if you do want to join an organization, I highly recommend it, but you know, be an active role within the organization. Don't show up just to show up. Yeah, I would say that's my advice for please get involved, but, you know, get involved and try to make a difference.
Yeah, I think that's good advice is that you can do stuff other than aviation stuff, mm-hmm. which could definitely help with the burnout stuff.
Yep. Give yourself an out. Give yourself something to do that's not airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have fun.
Yeah. Yeah, have fun with it. I mean, you're in college at the end of the day, but you just got to have fun with it. But
hey, you got to have fun in college.
Zach, thank you for being on. It's a good podcast. Absolutely. Good information. Love it's to have a blast on here.
Do it again sometime.
Of course. Of course.
When you're at the regionals. Thanks for listening, guys. Hope you enjoyed the podcast.
If you have any questions for us, DM us on Instagram @vertical_guidance.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.